Hi everyone, it's Eli. You know how sometimes you stumble upon something truly game-changing in healthcare? Well, I found it. Kinetisense. This cutting-edge motion capture technology is transforming movement, assessment, and recovery. Imagine getting instant AI-driven insights without any wearables on your patient. That's right, no ping pong balls needed. Just pure, accurate data. Perfect for boosting athletic performance, pinpointing imbalances, and refining rehab. Top professionals worldwide trust Kinetisense to maximize productivity and results. Check out our partner page to learn more. Experience the revolution in movement. Welcome to Wrap It Up Sports Medicine and More, the podcast that gives you a viewpoint in sports medicine that can't be found anywhere else. I'm your host, Eli Halleck, and we have a fantastic show ahead of us today. So let's get started. Today, we're talking with some colleagues in the field of athletic training and sports medicine who have a few years of experience. And we're going to draw upon that to discuss the profession, athletic training, sports medicine, specifically to the high school setting. We'll start with Cindy Kramer. Hello, Cindy.
Hi, how are you, Eli?
Good. Great to see you. Thanks for being here. John Rentar.
Hi, Eli. How you doing?
How you doing, John? Finally, Tim Masicki.
And by the way, hey, the gray hair should give it away how many years we've all been doing this.
Yes. Yeah. The gray.
Everyone in here, except Cindy, got the gray.
Also joining us today with some gray, but nowhere near the years that we have, Joel Dorning. Hey, Joel, how are you doing, buddy?
Doing well. Today, I get to be the pup of the group.
Yeah, you do. You've got us all by years on that.
Just by a few.
Understatement. We're going to get started just by simply asking a little bit about your background, where you're from, how you got into the field, whatever you want to share. So, Cindy, tell us a little bit about yourself.
All right. Well, I'm currently at Notre Dame High School in Sherman Oaks. I'm the head athletic trainer there. I have been here now, this is my 37th year at this setting. It has been my only high school setting, so secondary school setting. I've gone from having an athletic training as a hallway, or I should say a hallway as my athletic training room, to a really nice facility, about 900 square feet. That allows us to have treatment tables, taping, a lot of modalities. We can do rehab work, things like that. So over the years, it's changed a lot from having to be very creative in how I was able to treat and prep and rehab athletes to having actually equipment that allows us to do it better. And I got into athletic training because I started out as a PE teacher at elementary and middle school. And decided that wasn't my niche. So I went back to school for athletic training. From there, went into the high school setting, which is where I wanted to be.
Thank you. How about you, Tim?
Just to clarify, Cindy's first training room was actually a closet. It wasn't a hallway. Come on. Anyways.
No, it was a hallway. It was a hallway.
I went to the school in La Cunada, where these other two people might be working at. I was going to be a civil engineer, but I didn't like calculus, so that ruled that one out pretty quick. And then I took an EMT class. That was cool. Worked on an ambulance, got accepted to Cal Poly, San Luis Obispo. The first class I took there was beginning athletic training class, and I'm like, I think I can do this. Basically, that's how it all started. I was up at Montana State Billings for a year. When it's -5 for the entire month of February, it's time to get out. So the job at Loyola opened up. My mom begged me to apply. I did not want to apply there because I went to that other school. Caved to my mom, and 35 years later, I'm still there. It's great. The people I work with are great. The kids are great. It's a great environment. There's really no reason for me to... There has been no reason for me to leave. They just haven't figured out how to get rid of me yet.
So what you're saying is everybody at your school can thank your mom
Pretty much.
For being there. Yeah, I'm sure.
Well, actually, they can thank the principal that was in the interview with me at the time. He just hired me on the spot. He just goes, do you want the job?
And what about you, John?
Well, I started off, I went to San Diego State. I wanted to become I was in the biomed program, pre-med, and I was not getting very good grades. I was getting mainly B's, maybe an A, a few C's. And I'm thinking to myself, how am I supposed to go to medical school with B's, like a 3.0 average, a 2.8 average? So I was thinking about changing my major to paramedics, going to nursing maybe. And then I was dating this volleyball girl and she said, hey, why don't you become an athletic trainer? And I'm like, what is that? I had no idea at the age of 20 what an athletic trainer was, what they did. She kind of explained when she sprained her ankle, they were the people who took care of her, treated her, did all the icing, the heating, the massage, taping, all the rehab. And I looked into it, took a couple classes. I took an athletic training class. I got an A. I took the anatomy class. I got an A. Because it was actually a body I was looking at, not just, you know, chemistry, doing math and stuff. From there, somebody told me to get my teacher credential. I passed the NATA, the BOC, you know, went into teaching, got my teacher credential at Granite Hills High School. That was actually my first job, and that's in El Cajon, California. And then after that, I applied to Temecula Valley High School. I was there for 5 years. In the same district, a new high school opened up, and that's at Chaparral High School, and I've been there for 27 years. So this is like my, 33rd year as a high school athletic trainer. I would not trade anything for it. I don't even believe I go to work. I just come, do my thing, watch games. If something happens, I take care of it. And I want to promote this occupation. I know there's limitations here in the state of California, but if we can get past that, I think it'll be great.
Yeah, as John's talking about the exam, I think we were talking about this before, Eli. I've been certified now for 15 years, and I believe I was probably year two or three of when they changed the way the exam went. You guys all probably had the written sim. You had to actually do a hands-on practical with 3 to 5 people that were giving you the death stares, questioning if you knew anything, where nowadays they expect that the programs that the athletic training students go through will teach them all those hands-on skills and the internship hours that we do. And we walk in and take a 100% computerized test, and you walk out going, I hope I passed.
How do you feel about that, Tim?
I mean, it was the old school. You went in, they gave you a yellow marker for the written sim, and as long as you highlighted the correct answer, you kept moving on. And then if you highlighted the wrong answer, they basically said, oh, well, your patient or your athlete is hurt even more. I can't remember. I never got to that part.
Yes, the magic marker. I remember that well. How about you, Cindy? You remember the magic marker?
I was the first year of the magic marker.
Fantastic.
So, yeah, and everything was going great. I got to the end of an ACL rehab. And the question was, okay, your athlete has now gone through everything. What is your recommendation? You know, back to full participation, hold them back, send them back to the doctor, whatever. And I put my highlighter on the wrong choice. And you can't erase it. So you put it in the wrong place, you're done. And the practical was hilarious. Yeah, I had 3 guys at a table. We had the old school tape recorder. I had a mic on my collar. And we had to do 8 different types of skills. I had a 6'4" humongous male had to do a knee eval. So I had this big long leg that was as tall as I, you know, as long as I am tall.
For those of you who can't see Cindy or don't know Cindy, she's
4'10".
Yeah, she's a little shorter than a 6'5" patient. So I bet that was a little difficult. But you do fine now. You know how to deal with 6'8" guys. It's no problem.
No, it's not a problem. And I'll tell you, I still have my qualms about the all computer test, because our profession is hands-on and being able to do what we've learned. It's not book knowledge. If we pass the BOC, it just tells us that we're at least 70% competent in the knowledge that we're supposed to have. Being able to do what we're supposed to do, that only comes with practical experience. So I think with the computer test, the onus is on the preceptors and on the instructors at the programs they're in. They're signed off that this student is competent or if they're proficient and they're signing off on it, their reputation is, the preceptor's reputation is going, and that's whether or not is our profession going to stay successful. Are we doing a good enough job of making sure they're prepared?
John, you brought up another point earlier about California being the only state with a national certification. Unfortunately, our attempts at becoming licensed, registered have been shot down 5 or 6 times, 5 that I'm aware of, and I'm sure there were a couple beforehand. I know we have some state legislation coming up this year. I believe it morphed from a licensure to, I believe it's registration, if I remember correctly. That's still a step in the right direction. And we know we have some big support. So we're hoping that gets passed. But as an athletic trainer that's practiced for, as you said, 33 years, how do you feel about being in the only state where we're not regulated and identified as healthcare providers?
How do I feel about it? I am frustrated with that. I am still encountering people who are at the secondary level that claim that they're athletic trainers, and they're not. They tape, they massage, they stretch, but they are not athletic trainers. I even ran into a person that was an Army medic, and he was a quote-unquote athletic trainer for that high school. It is something I'd like to see where we are consistent with our profession here in the state of California. And if somebody does say that they are an athletic trainer, I would like to know that they are, to assure that they are. How's that? That's how I feel.
Tim, what about you?
It's beyond, I think, frustrating in the high school setting, because like John was saying, you go to a lot of schools. I mean, there's still 60% of the high schools, I think, is the latest number, that don't have certified athletic trainers. But there's these people walking around saying they're certified, and you just shake your head at what they're saying and what they do. And it's a ticking time bomb, I think. Before someone does something, someone really gets hurt, or unfortunately really bad things happen. And because they don't have the right training or the certification or the licensing, it's just bad. I would like to see it. I don't know anymore. I mean, I thought this thing was going to pass, I don't know, 15 years ago. I can't remember when it was first brought up. Every year it's like, okay, and then it goes to the governor and the governor vetoes it. I mean, Schwarzenegger vetoed it. Newsom's vetoed it. You get the whole state assembly for it. You get a lot of people backing it. And then one person says no. And that's the end of it. But I think it does have to be really looked at given the state of athletics right now. And saying that you're going to have an athletic trainer at a club soccer event, they need to be an athletic, certified athletic trainer, not someone who says they're an athletic trainer.
That's a good point. Anybody can say they're an athletic trainer. I mean, my daughters could say it, and one's in college, actually at your alma mater, Cal Poly SLO. She could say it, doesn't mean it's true. That really causes an issue, not knowing that you have a true healthcare provider on the sideline, especially at a youth sport, whether that's club or where we all work at the high school setting. You need to take care of these young men, young women, and protect them from injury. That's our job. That's what we're trained for. That's our profession and our love. That's why we've all been at a high school for so many years. Protecting the kids is our priority. We look at them like they're ours. For those 8 to 10, well, let's be realistic, 12 to 16 hour days, they are our kids that we are watching out for. With that, we've seen a huge evolution in our field over the last 15, 20 years. Over your career, Cindy, how have you seen the field of sports medicine and athletic training evolve? What have been some of the biggest changes you've seen?
I think the biggest changes, one in concussion management. I've gone through a number of coaches, and when I first started, it was like, well, I always got my bell rung. So the fact that we baseline test now, that we have state laws that help guide our treatment plan, our return to play plan, I think our kids are now participating in a safer environment. Other changes, kids are buying into prehab and before practices and games and recovery after games at my place. They're in foam rolling, they're using massage guns, they're stretching, they're doing dynamic exercises. Before practice, they'll come in, whether or not you think ice baths are worthy or not, whatever the feeling is, they come in, they do them, they feel better, but they're trying to take care of themselves. The ones that are serious about what they're doing, about their participation. Coaches, depends on the coaches as far as buying into what we do and what they need, but it seems to be easier, but it's just a time thing. They have to see what we do and understand that our job is the health and wellness of those kids. And I will bend over backwards to make sure that that happens. I'm not going to put them in a situation where they could be more at risk.
I can attest to that. My sister, you were the first athletic trainer she ever came across. She was playing softball for Alamany High School and slid into second base just a bit too hard and tore up her ankle. And next thing I hear, I was up at Humboldt State at the time studying athletic training. I met this woman at the softball game against Notre Dame. She took a look at my ankle. And because of that, I'm going to see a doctor today. She said she was an athletic trainer. And then she paused. Is that what you're studying to do? Like, yeah, that's exactly what I'm studying. And so, you know, her first interaction was you so many years ago. So just kind of cool little. Yeah. Well, I'm glad I got to share that. Hey, John, spinning off this question, what about you, the landscape? How have you seen it change in your region over the last few years?
Well, the athletic training jobs, they're actually hiring athletic trainers around here. I was the only athletic trainer at a high school within like 15 miles. Here's something funny. A wrestling tournament, we would have a wrestling tournament on a Saturday morning. The first year I was covering it, they realized there was an athletic trainer. I looked at their athletes because nobody looked at their athletes, because if their athletes didn't see a doctor, then they didn't see anybody. So here I am at a tournament. I'm just assessing their injuries. The next year, I open up. I'm there. I'm setting up my first aid station. And all of a sudden, I got a line of like 15 kids right there with their coaches. Hey, can you check out my wrestler's shoulder? Hey, can you check my wrestler's knee? I was just like, what the heck is going on? Because nobody looked at them. Nobody assessed them. That's the biggest thing that I've noticed. It's, you know, how many athletic trainers are here in my area, in our school district and the surrounding school districts, either if they're, you know, hired by the district or they're hired by some hospital or some company, that has gone up. With regards to coaches, it's a slow change. We all know that. Understanding what I do and my thoughts about should I hold them out, should I not hold them out, pretty much my call. A lot of times I'll tell the athletes, if I can run faster than you, then you should sit. And also, you know,
I like that.
I might have to use that.
Yeah. And then I always feel like that every year it's the same thing. I have to re-educate the parents. And luckily, some of the parents will trickle down the information like, hey, have your son or have your daughter see Rentar. Who's Rentar? He's the athletic trainer. Well, we have our own doctor. No, he's better than that. It's kind of cool. But I still have to educate over and over the different parents that come in, the different kids that come in, because they have no idea what I do. Number one, they think I'm just a teacher because I do teach pretty much, you know, a full day. But I do educate them, let them know what I do, that I care, and I'm always there for them.
And you mentioned one thing, or a couple things, actually. You said more schools in your district are hiring athletic trainers, which is fantastic. We've seen a jump. I know in my career, and I've got a few less years than you guys, but not by much, I've seen a huge increase in athletic trainers when we go to away games. Usually they are realistic, real athletic trainers if they claim it. However, not always. Teasing out that information is important. I love how you say the word educate, because no matter what, we have to educate our students, our coaches, the parents. There is a little trickle down, as you said. We have the alum that show up at this point. I know, Tim, you've been 3 decades at your school. Cindy, the same. And John, I know you're coming up close. I'm close to 3 decades. And with that in mind, there are a lot of students that come back now have their sons here. And they understand if there's an injury, they're going to come to us. And Mr. Dorney, you know, they know at our school with Joel, they come to us as well. And I'm sure Joel's seen, and Joel can attest to this, a change just in his tenure with the idea that, yeah, you're supposed to go to the athletic trainer first before you go to the ER, before you go to urgent care.
I think another thing that also helps out with the schools too is, I mean, like you said, you start to see the trickle down of athletes, but at least in our environment, we're also starting to see the trickle down of new hired employees, coaches who are former athletes of ours. So now it's more people who buy in and understand
very true
what we do and what we provide for the athletes.
Always nice when you get a former athlete because they understand.
It's very true, Joel. The newer coaches that come in, they've either worked under, they've had the experience with an athletic trainer and understand what we do. And that has been, that's been a real positive, a real blessing for me in that as we get new, younger coaches, it's easier to have that communication. That really helps in getting just a really straight line of care for that athlete. They're not getting lost. They're not going sideways. That's a big part. So we get them back faster because there's better trust and communication between myself and my coaches.
You mentioned communication, Tim. You and I go back and forth all the time because we're in the same league. Same with Cindy. Communication is so important in today's sports environment. There's so much pressure on these young men, young women to excel, more so now than ever before at the high school level. Collaboration in our field, sports medicine, athletic training, is so important. How do you stress or utilize collaboration as a way to communicate with either peers, coaches, to make sure things go well for your students?
Well, that's interesting. Okay. As far as my coaches are concerned, I try to talk to my coaches every day. I don't go out to practices and stand at practices anymore because usually when I do that, all of a sudden I have 20 kids around me. So it's disrupting to practice. But I always try to talk to my coaches every day, especially ones that are in season and have kids hurt. As far as you guys, well, we're constantly talking to each other and calling each other and seeing what's going on where and what's going, you know, what's happening. And a lot of us have the same type of situations, whether it's an injury or dealing with something. I'm a big proponent to, you know, open lines of communication. You know, unless you got to be able to talk to people. Most of our job, I think, is being able to explain to the kids in basic English what's wrong with them and help them get through in English speak, not medical speak. I mean, how many times we've had the kid come back from the doctor and you ask him, well, what did the doctor say was wrong? I don't know. I didn't understand. And then you got to kind of piece it all together and explain to them their exact injury. This is what you did. This is how long it usually takes. This is what we're going to do. And that's where being a high school trainer is, I think, pretty rewarding, is that you're able to really explain to them and make them feel better, even though sometimes the news isn't great, that maybe your season's over or you're going to be out 4 to 6 weeks. Explaining what's wrong in English to the student is huge. And talking to parents. I know parents feel a little bit more comfortable when there's an athletic trainer there, especially my parents, when they see one of us at games. They know if something happens, their kids are going to get taken care of. And that's the biggest concern, I think, with a lot of parents is something happens to my child, who's taking care of my child.
Very true. Hey, John, it looked like you wanted to add something there. Please do.
That's the thing. Just wanted to reiterate what Tim was saying. Communication with the parents. I communicate with everybody through text. The other day on Monday, we had this lightning storm come through. Like, what the heck? And I had to tell them, I threw a text, guys got to get off the field now. Luckily, most of our coaches are on campus. I run into them regularly on campus and we communicate many times throughout the day about their athletes, especially their injured athletes, and just talking about games.
When you say on campus, you mean, again, for my sister Angela.
Okay. On campus coaches. So they're teachers, they're aides, they are campus supervisors. So they're on campus from 8:30 in the morning till, you know, 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock, then they go out to the field. So
vested employees there all the time.
Right. Uh-huh. And that's, I think all but one head varsity coach is on campus. And I think we have another 22 on campus coaches at all levels.
That's fantastic.
That's great.
I know Joel had a question he wanted to ask, so I'm going to defer the mic to him.
Yeah. Also, I mean, also to piggyback on that real fast too, I've also noticed a change in communication with officials. I've had a lot more officials over the last couple of years who see me at a sideline and go, I'm so happy you're here because you take the responsibility of making some of those calls off my shoulders. And, you know, that's what we're there for. So I think that's also changed.
Very true.
You know, one of the things I think a lot of times we're thinking about too, I'm only in year 15. I've been at two different settings, but, you know, I look at especially Tim and Cindy, you guys are talking 30 plus years all at the same setting. How have you been able to not only just do that, but also prevent yourself from burning out? You're talking about the same environment. You know, it's changed over time, but athletic training is physically and mentally demanding with the time and effort you have to put in. And even like John said, every year you're having the same conversations with the new group of parents, and it's like a broken record. How do you keep yourself from burning out and balancing a work-life balance?
First of all, where I'm at, you don't stay somewhere 35 years if you don't like going to work every day. But our kids are great. Our parents, for the most part, are great. It's a great environment. As far as, hey, I'm not going to lie, there are bad days. I mean, there are days where I'm like, get me, you know what, out of here. I'm done. I'm done dealing with this kid, or I'm done dealing with this situation. It's just natural. In the long run, when you're standing out maybe over at a practice or you're at a game and you're joking with the kids, or you're talking to parents before or after a game, or at maybe there might be some sort of an event at on campus and they're appreciative of what you do, thank you, it makes it all the bad stuff kind of go away pretty quick. It's not as bad when I first started. Being there that long, I think people just go, he knows what he's doing. I mean, I still have people question me, which is fine. They should. When you're fresh out of the start athletic trainer, you need to have a Teflon coat and make sure stuff just kind of runs off of you. You will be put through the cycle of, well, who are you? What do you know? You're awfully young. Who taught you? With years of practice and experience, that all goes away.
Mostly.
Yeah.
But I like going to work. And we got games tonight. I mean, I'm going to hate the drive, but I like going to the games. Now, if you tell the kids I said any of this, please.
We only have, you're safe. We only have two people that listen routinely. You know, yeah. We've got maybe three listeners. I think I'm related to two of them. We should be fine. You're safe. It looked like John wanted to jump on that.
I wanted to say, you know, it was like work. This isn't work. This is actually fun in my eyes. And luckily, how do we avoid burnout? Thank God there are seasons. We have fall. I'm done with football. Then we go inside. And then I'm done with inside. Then we get to go outside for softball, baseball, and track. That's what keeps me going. And it is the kids. The kids, they rotate in and out. The kids make it fun. You talk to them. I still feel like I'm 25 because I'm around 14 to 18 year olds.
I hear that quite often at home myself. Yes.
Yeah.
I always did. Oh, the kids always ask me, what's my favorite sport? And I tell them the one that ends. Is my favorite sport.
That seems to be a standing quote for many of us.
Yeah.
Maybe even Cindy. Cindy, what about you?
Oh, well, in all the years, every time I felt like it was time for a change, something would change in my job that made it new again. You know, I really like the environment here at my school. My colleagues are friends outside of work. And so it's that, like you said, John and Tim, it's the kids. I was at a track meet with Tim's school. Our kids just were having such a great day, and they were coming over, PR'd on this, or coach, I PR'd on that. And they wanted to share excitement with me. Like, I'm part of the team that's going. And I know you're still teaching and doing athletic training. I'm on my second year now of teaching. So I've gone from a full-time athletic trainer, full-time teacher, plus athletic training, to over the years getting less and less classes, to the point where now I am hired as just a athletic trainer. And so my days are different, and it's been quite an adjustment, but it's a nice adjustment. I like the time now of being able to do one job very well. It's been a nice change.
So you're really enjoying just the clinical setting at this point in your career?
I am. I am. I like going out to the games. I like doing the clinical, doing the rehab stuff, doing the evals, and just doing that stuff. So yeah, it's a good place to be right now.
One of the things we often discuss with our younger interns or younger colleagues, they want to know, what are some of the important qualities of an athletic trainer to possess in a leadership role? Because when you've been on same location for several years, people start to look for you or look to you as a leader in either the campus or in the field. What are some of the things that you believe are important in athletic training to be seen as a leader? How about you, John?
Right off the top of my head is consistency. To be at the sporting events, to be in the athletic training room so kids can find you, just available is huge. And also, you know, just how I conduct myself on the field, how I cheer, how I don't gripe about certain calls, or, you know, I try and bite my tongue most of the time, especially when something goes against us. Just how you carry yourself, that's huge. Conduct and consistency.
Elevate your knowledge, ignite your curiosity, and compete with the best minds at events hosted by the American Academic Competition Institute. AACI's sports medicine competitions feature practical exercises, challenging quizzes, specialty tests, and keynote speakers that foster knowledge and social engagement in healthcare and sports medicine. Go to AACITest.org for more information on upcoming regional and national competitions. Sign up for the Ultimate Intellectual Showdown. There's an issue on campus, so thanks for staying, Cindy. We'll continue without you, unfortunately. Tim, what about you?
Being able to stay extremely calm in emergencies and being able to handle the situation without putting people in a lot of panic. 90% of a kid, when he gets injured, the first few minutes, is if you can calm them down, they get a whole lot better and you're able to kind of deal with them. Staying calm and even keel and being decisive with whatever action you take. If you feel you need to call the paramedics, you call the paramedics. If you need to call the parents, call the parents.
You know, if we have any of the students from the school you're at, listen, when you say stay calm, they might question that comment right there. And same with me. If I say that, I know 90% of my students are going to say it. But as a clinician, I understand what you're saying. Because if you're not calm in that emergency medical situation or when that initial injury happens, it's all hell breaks loose. It's craziness at that point. So
when that kid comes in with an arm that's angulated or has a new joint, you want to be able to say, wow, that looks like it hurts.
Oh my God, look at that. Yeah.
You don't want to be going
there. Yeah, no. That's
you don't want to be running up and down the hallways. That's not a good thing. So sometimes I do a lot of, you and me are kind of from the same mold a little bit. We break the ice with maybe a little joke or some sort of sarcasm. That initial, oh my God, what happened to me, gets relieved a little bit.
And also builds a little trust right then and there, because they know you're going to take care of them. You're not freaking out. You cracked a little dad joke or whatever my daughters call it. They know, okay, this guy is going to take care of me. I can trust him. No matter what I've heard, I can trust him.
And we're not going to pass him off to somebody else.
Yeah. And we're going to
talk. It's your decision. Yeah. You're up.
Yeah. You're on the mound. It's your pitch. Let's go. All those cliches, they come to rest right then and there. What about you, John? When it comes to those situations where you're up to bat, I mean, you're there, you've got a serious situation going on. How do you handle that situation and the people around you?
It's kind of like the same thing. It's just, you know, again, just staying calm. Just yesterday, I had a girl, she was sliding in the second. This is after our two baseball games and our softball game. And because we don't have any facilities, our fresh football team is practicing from 5 to 7. So this happened around 6:30. A girl slid in the second, twisted her ankle. I'm pretty sure it was just a sprain, didn't fracture anything, but the way she was reacting, it's like she had a compound fracture somewhere. And everything I touched hurt. Her knee hurt, her patella hurt, her thigh hurt. And I was like, all right, I'm not touching you. Let's, you know, so I started talking to her a little bit, started, you know, just talked about the day. How was your day today? And this, and calmed her down. And she stopped crying. She wasn't emotional. And then we got down to it. And yeah, it was just a sprained ankle. But the way she was reacting was like the light, you know, life was over. It's like, I'm going to the ER. I can't play. My leg is broken. You just got to calm them down.
Especially if it's their first injury. They've never truly been hurt before. They get a solid grade 2, which for my sister, that's a partial tear of a ligament with significant stretching. Okay. And just, mm-hmm. just so you know, that's what we're talking about. Anything like that, where you feel a snap, crack, or pop, as we say in the field, every kid's going to react different. We all have different pain tolerances, how we're going to react. Someone's 2 out of 10 pain might be somebody else's 8 out of 10 pain. And you never know until mm-hmm. you get your hand. Tim's laughing about that. You got a good story there, or what are you thinking?
Good story. A few hundred.
Plural, right? Plural.
I mean, come on. It's amazing. What's 10 being the worst it's ever been? What is it? 12. Really? 12, but you're moving your arm.
You walked in. Weren't screaming. You weren't crying.
And then the ones that are, you know, like you're going, damn. I had a kid he snapped his clavicle, ended up with a plate. He had every right to be in pain, but he was taking it pretty well. I'll give him that. Now he has a 3-inch plate in his collarbone, but he had every right to be screaming and yelling and all that type of pain. Yeah. So,
you know, it's based on the experience, right? With their injuries. And then even with the athletes, it's not even the athletes. What about the parents? The parents look over and then they're like, what happened? And there's their ankle twisted or broken leg. And then they pass out.
So true. So true. And you always got to hope that mom and dad don't run out on the field. I had this conversation yesterday in the middle of a lacrosse game. We had one student athlete take a hit to the hip. Definite hip pointer. Again, Ange, that's a bruise, just so you know. Okay. bruised hip. No doubt about it. Mom comes out of the stands, stands there next to me. My son's in pain. Well, yeah, that's what it looks like. She was ready to charge the field. I said, ma'am, please don't do that. Please don't go out on that field. Why? Nobody on this campus will let him live it down.
So you have a new injury to deal with.
Yeah.
I don't think I've ever had a parent do that. I've given what my wife calls, I've given the parent the finger where I point to the stands and I, you know, come here. Kind of thing.
I'm glad you told us what that meant, because the other finger would get you fired.
Well, then, right? I guess that's the kind of the C7, thing. Oh, C7. Finger telling you to calm down.
Yeah, come here.
That normal thing. I don't think I've ever. God, I mean, yeah, that'd be weird having a parent run on the field. Although it's probably gonna, you know, in today's age,
knock on wood, might happen today.
Never know what's gonna happen on campus, right?
This is true. I think it comes with the territory, though, but it has changed since I first started. I remember my second day when I was working, you know, what the coach told me. I never had an athletic trainer before. Why do I need one now? And now it's games don't get rescheduled unless they check first now. Are we going to be at certain practices or that type of stuff? So it's changed a lot in 35 years to where you're part of the equation that everybody wants to make sure you're there, no type of thing.
And using that and jumping off that, using our data right now, and they want to make sure that we are at a venue or at multiple venues. We're good, but I can't cut myself in half. So 10 years ago, when they added another full contact sport, adding more hours, we were able to justify bringing on a second athletic trainer, which some schools would say, and I know John might chime in, that's unheard of. Well, if you can prove, look, I'm now working 60 hours a week, you've increased my hours 15 hours a week just in the last few years because the addition of this sport, maybe it is time to bring in a second one, either part-time. And that's how it initially started at our school. We brought in a second person per diem, 5 hours a week for the first year. Then we proved it to 10 hours a week the second year. And then I think it took us 4 years to get a second full-time part teacher, part athletic trainer. At this point, Joel is what, two courses?
10 years later, teaching two courses. But I mean, that still evolves too, because we wear many hats and they ask us to do many different things. And it's tough to say yes and no at the same time.
Because in our profession, we say yes. We don't say no, which is something we'll talk about on another another cast, another episode, guaranteed.
You need to learn to say no.
Oh, that is an understatement. That is an understatement. Yeah, we're currently with the increase since Joel's been at our place the last 10 years. We have increased our hours to the point that we, Tim and I have talked about this. We've increased our hours to 3 months worth of additional 40-hour weeks of game coverage in 10 years. So a full 3 months extra 40-hour weeks.
You're forgetting summer now, too, because there's not even a break during the summer.
And see, it depends on the school. In our case, we're gone during the summer. But
Tim said, he likes the sports that don't end, but I don't know if sports do end anymore.
They really don't.
No, everything is year-round now. It's just year-round. Baseball in the fall, baseball in the winter. Wait, it's crazy. Football right now, we're training. Yep. We're running. We're not putting
balls in the gym.
We don't have that. Yeah.
And that all goes back to burnout, because a lot of times they don't talk to us. They just see their few hours a week and they don't factor in, well, football's going here, so you're going to cover my football practice. Yeah, we got that. But what about baseball? What about basketball? What about soccer? What about lacrosse? What about swimming? What about the other staff, the other coaches don't see always everything we have to do, which is unfortunate because it does lead to what we discussed earlier. If you can't keep everything away from that horrible word, burnout. And that's the way you don't want to go. Obviously, the four of us have been able to do it. Joel's still the youngin' here, but we've been fortunate enough in some way, shape, or form to stay away from that. And I think Joel had...
Well, I think, you know what?
Go ahead.
I think one of the things I've noticed is with younger athletic trainers, they stay too connected on the weekends and all this stuff because you can. You need to separate. When I leave work sometimes, I'm done. You know, only in an emergency will I answer or talk to someone. You need to have a separate life away from whatever it is that you're interested in. You need to find something else to do. If you do nothing but athletic training 24/7, you'll be pretty much done in a few years. It will burn you out. You need to find other things. I mean, I love NASCAR and everyone gives me a hard time about it.
Yes, we do.
I got my shirt on. I mean, it's my out. You need to disconnect from your athletes. Your athletes shouldn't be texting you at 9:30 at night, 10 o'clock at night, 9 o'clock at night, or all weekend. You know, you can just easily say, hey, see me tomorrow at lunch. I mean, we're going to be good.
Very true. What about you, John?
Well, it's the same thing. With regards to burnout, here's the thing with mine. I see the light at the end of the tunnel. Burnout is no longer in my book, but about 15 years ago, it was there. It was right there in front of my face, and I had to readjust. You know, right where the same years as Joel, I mean, it was there. I was flustered. I mean, I would update my resume every 2 months. My colleagues, you know, the physical therapists, even our team doctors, we go, look at him. There he goes again. He's a little bit irritated. Look out. Now it's, you know, change, right? You go from fall to winter to spring, kind of rejuvenates you. You see different kids. It's not always the football players because towards the end, they start to irritate you. And then you're refreshed because now you have a brand new batch of basketball players. You know, I see the light at the end of the tunnel, wherever that is. It could be 3 years. It could be 8 years. It could even be 10. But I know that one of these years is going to be my last year. And I love this job. Like I said, do we work? Tim, do we work? We don't work. We just go.
Well, if you ask people where I work at, they don't think I do anything.
You know, seriously.
Let's just call it the truth here, but not really. Yeah, I agree. It's not, if you like what you're doing. I mean, I was probably there a few years ago with the burnout, but I'm like you now. When is that? I am way closer to that year coming where it's going to be, all right, it's time. But at the same time, I still have to figure out what I'm, you know, I consider myself young.
We are,
you know,
young at like heart, you young earlier. In mind. Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, when you're working with kids now, when you work with the kids, they keep you young. You have no choice. I mean, mm-hmm. If you don't stay up with them, man, they'll run right over you.
Although they let you know you're old, but yeah.
Oh, every day.
Every day.
every day I hear about, you know, oh, when you used a phone, was it connected with a rope?
You gotta use that one.
Yeah, on me, right, Joel? Yeah, exactly. Thanks, buddy.
How do you guys figure, you know, as far as, you know, as a veteran, times change, since you brought that old part up, how do you find that you stay sharp and up to date with the ever changing, especially because, I mean, I would say in the last 10 years, what they expect us to know is vastly different than when you guys were originally starting off?
Teaching kept me current, especially when I had to talk about athletic training, how to become one. Still don't really understand it, but I'm understanding it a little bit more each time because I went through the internship program. Here's a sport. You cover it. Okay, thanks.
Now, when you say internship program, again, looking back at my sister, what do you mean by the internship program?
Well, I was hoping that would come up. Yeah, when I was at San Diego State, I applied to be an athletic trainer student or student athletic trainer. Got into the program, and it was an internship. So we worked after school from 1 to about 7 o'clock each day, 6 hours, 5 to 6 hours, somewhere around there. And if we had late games, then we had late games. That was our experience, our hands-on experience, lab, or if you will. I learned so much doing that. I'm a hands-on person. So yeah. Reading stuff out of the books was dry, whatever. And then all of a sudden you're like, oh, that's what a sublux patella looks like, you know?
So you had the classroom, stuff and specific classes, but then you would have on top of it, more hours of internship, hands-on practicum, so to speak, either games, practices, training room. And you were working just about as much as you were in the classroom, correct?
Right. We had to do 1,800 hours in 2 years, whatever that meant.
I remember that. Yeah. I'm pretty sure I did more than that in a year. How about you, yeah. Tim?
Oh, same here. I did more than that in one season.
Yeah,
I
mean, probably.
The more time you spend in the training room, the more you learned. You know, I mean, when the doctors came in and all that, that's how I learned it all, was through the internship.
Yeah. And also to see injuries, you have to cover the games. You have to cover practices. If you don't, then you never see them firsthand. All right, my first injury I ever saw was a ruptured patellar tendon. I put my hand on the guy's knee, and there was no patella. The patella was about halfway up his femur. It was like really cool. That was my first injury.
That's when you know you're in. It's cool.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It was cool.
How about you, Tim?
What was the question again? I forgot. I've started laughing.
As far as staying sharp, what have you done to kind of keep your skills honed?
Teach. That's kind of a luxury. There's plenty of other things I do, but I think one of the things is because of the league we're in, all the schools in our league have athletic trainers. I make sure that one of us travels with as many teams as possible. And I mean, I'll be with the soccer team when we go to your place or lacrosse and just talking to the other, you know, when I see Eli, I mean, first thing I always walk into his training room and go, hey, by the way, the real professional trainer is actually here now. So,
and I warn our interns from Cal State Northridge every time. Okay, here's what he's going to say. He's coming in. But that's collegial. It's fun. It keeps it.
But, you know, we share, you know, like different things, you know, and we go to conferences. You see a lot of people, talk to them. I mean, I think I learned more outside of the conference room than inside the conference room by just seeing, you know, hearing what people have had to do and deal with, and athletes, especially athletes today. I mean, I'll tell you the biggest change, having to become somewhat of a psychologist.
Amen.
A lot more mental issues with athletes versus 35 years ago. These kids are struggling, some of them. And a lot of times there's no physical injury, it's a mental injury. When things aren't making sense, you got to kind of go, hey, what's going on at home? And before you know it, you got this kid just crying in your office about just stuff that's going on in his life. So that's where I think maybe things have changed. I think that's where we can help, because the kids do trust us to some extent. And the fact that we can help them like that is huge.
Yeah, I agree. That's definitely been a change I've seen at our school, really working closely with the counseling department when we see something serious. I know Joel and I have both had students that we have referred, but at the same time, there are a lot of times where we don't have the opportunity to refer. We will be there in a moment of crisis for that young man Or if you're a co-ed school like John, that young man, young woman, it's on you at that point as a healthcare provider to care for that individual and really set the right tone and be there. I always wondered when I graduated why I took so many psychology courses for our profession. It really became more apparent in the last 5 years. I've gone back to more of reviewing that information and updated because it was so long ago than any other information in the last 10 years. It's definitely been a struggle for these young men and women. I've wondered, should I have gotten my master's degree in psych? It might have helped. Heck with education.
Yeah,
it's kind of crazy nowadays. So believe it or not, we've been here for a while. I'm just going to ask one more question to you guys. And we're going to give you both plenty of time to answer it and answer it as you'd like. Do you have, as a veteran athletic trainer with a wealth of experience, what is the single most important piece of advice you would give to someone considering a career in our field? Ooh, we got a pause. Serious faces here. They're contemplating the universe at the moment. And here comes.
I mean, to be quite honest, there are some things that I don't agree with right now.
Okay.
If someone's thinking about doing this, understand you're not going to make a lot of money. I mean, to start. Okay. And the amount of education required, it's going to cost a lot of money. Be prepared for that. The thing is, the Teflon coat is what I always call it. People are going to question you. People are going to say, you know, what do you know? Well, you're not a doctor. You didn't go to medical school. And the amazing thing is the doctors are the ones that are saying, you guys go do this, do this, do this. They're the ones that give us all the like free range. But there are people out there that are like, well, you didn't go to med. How do you know? And I'm like, whatever kind of thing. You know, I've only seen that injury about 3,000 times in my lifetime. You know, you just have to understand it's going to be a longer road than it was from when we did it. And to be certified, it's going to take work, money, time. At some point, you'll get the reward, but I don't think you're going to get it right off the bat. That's my opinion. That's my little world. Okay.
And then, John, your turn.
Yeah. No, mine is just straight. Because kids are always asking, hey, I'm thinking about athletic training. Should I do it? And I'm all, start, you know, looking into your classes. Figure out what you want to do. And then, so here's my big one is, what's your option if you don't? You know, instead of something...
That's a great question, going into actually.
It. So what's your option? You know, back in the 90s, I had kids major in kinesiology, major in exercise nutritional science, whatever it was at the college. And then they finished and they were like, well, what do I need to do now? And they didn't do anything with it. And it was just a bachelor's. So what are you going to do with it? And if you don't do anything with it, what are you going to do next? What's your option? Okay, so that's my big thing. And that goes with every career. So maybe not specifically for athletic training, but for anything else, you know, you would like to tie in. So that's why I broke the mold. I'm Filipino, right? I broke the mold. I told my family I was going to become an athletic trainer. They're like, what the heck is that? You're supposed to become a nurse or a doctor.
Yeah, nope. you don't have that choice. Healthcare, nurse, doctor, that's it.
And I said, it's in healthcare. And they're like, well, what is it? Why is it athletic? Well, you know, you're always playing sports. I'm like, I'm not playing the sports. I'm taking care of the injuries. You know, they still didn't understand it. But I broke the mold. I became a teacher at the same time. And that fell into my lap. It wasn't a plan to become a teacher. It just fell into my lap. And so I don't know any better. So I start at early in the morning and I end late at night. People always ask, why do I do that? I don't know. I don't know any better. I didn't go home. I don't ever go home at 3 o'clock. Tim's laughing at me. I know he's laughing at me.
3 o'clock.
Well, when you have assistants and, you know, practices start at 6 a.m., you know, I mean, yes, there are days where you're there at 5:45 and you do get to go home at 3, but there's practices before school, there's practices after school.
You got to love what you do, right?
Well, I think that's the whole reason. And like John was saying, this is the only profession where you just get to go and watch sports. And usually you're in the front row, okay?
Yeah.
Yep. On the field, so true.
And you this week, let's see, I've seen lacrosse, I've seen volleyball. I've seen baseball. Track was away, so I didn't see track. You see so many different sporting events, and it's kind of nice. Most people are stuck in an office 8 to 5. Our office is actually out on a field most of the time.
And it's fun to be around those. Even though it is
lugging Gatorade coolers and ice and all that stuff. So
fun to be around those young,
I don't wear a suit and a tie, do you?
Well, we have to at our school when we're teaching, yeah. But let me tell you, that that tie's gone real quick down to polos. As quickly as possible.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'd like to add something as far as what I would recommend or some advice. Surrounding yourself with colleagues you know, you trust, you can lean on whenever necessary, because there are going to be points where you are questioned. People are going to say, just like both of you said, you're not a doctor. What do you know? And you're going to question yourself. And if you have a colleague like Joel right here on campus, or John down at Temecula, Timmy, not too far in LA, we can just text, call, Zoom when necessary, and bounce ideas off each other and get that reassurance you need. You're going to be better. You're going to stick to the profession much longer, and you're going to be a better clinician, because in the end, this is a calling. It's not for everybody.
Right.
Yeah.
It will eat your time.
That's a great way to put it. It will eat your time.
People ask me, how do I have I stayed married for 33 years? I go, yeah, we don't see each other. It's hard to argue.
Less is more.
Less is more. On that note.
No. That's a good one, Tim.
I think
my wife. No.
Well, do we need to edit that out? I want to keep
that. No. You heard me say it.
So. I love it. Well, gentlemen, I know we're coming up close to the time where we all got to get out for practices and treatments and rehab. So we're going to let you all go. Thank you for participating. Truly appreciate you. I appreciate you guys as colleagues and friends. And we'll see you next time. All right. Have a good day.
Right back at you, Eli.
Thank you guys.
All right.
Bye, guys.
Have fun.
Take care.
We hope you enjoyed this episode. Want to make sure you hear every episode? Remember to like, follow, and subscribe to our podcast. Don't forget to share our podcast with your colleagues, family, and friends. Your support will help more people find and enjoy our content. Wrap It Up Sports Medicine and More is directed by Eli Halleck. It is produced by Gabriel Halleck. Our theme music is by Coma Studios via Pixabay. The views and opinions expressed on this podcast are solely those of the contributors. Want to know more about us? Visit us at wrapituppodcast.com. That's with one P, wrapituppodcast.com. Wrap It Up Sports Medicine and More is a production of Halleck Consulting, LLC.